Our next case is Silva v. McDonough, 21-1976.
May it please the Court, Kenneth Carpenter appearing on behalf of Mr. Philip Silva. Mr. Silva's case asserts that the Veterans Court relied upon a misinterpretation of the provisions of 38 U.S.C. 7104 and 7105. Those provisions guarantee a claimant that when they disagree with a decision of the VA, that there is a process that will facilitate an appeal or review of that decision by the Secretary, by the Board of Veterans Appeals, in the two statutes that I mentioned. In this case, in 2010, Mr. Silva filed a claim that was seeking to reopen a previously denied claim for service connection for post-traumatic stress disorder. Post-traumatic stress disorder was his original claim. Post-traumatic stress disorder was his claim to reopen. That claim was denied. He timely filed a notice of disagreement, received a statement of the case, which identified the issue as service connection for post-traumatic stress disorder, and then he completed that appeal with the submission of a VA Form 9.
As that was in August of 2012. Correct, Mr. Cohen?
That's correct, Your Honor. August of 2012.
How did this, we have in November of 2012, this examination report. It's in November 15 or something, 2012. How did that come about? How did that take place? Was it something that you had requested, or was it something that the VA decided to have?
I'm not privy to how it came about. I know that I did not, on behalf of Mr. Silva, request that, nor did Mr. Silva request that examination. But that examination was done by the VA at the VA's initiative.
Mr. Carpenter, and there was never a request for further development of the record?
Well, there was a later submission after the appeal was perfected that indicated that there was additional...
Well, I guess what I'm wondering, you sought this PTSD claim, I can't remember the year now, I guess 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And when you filed that, which was interpreted as a request to reopen a previously denied PTSD claim,
yes,
did you request further development of the record?
But not expressly, Your Honor, no. But later, after the claim was submitted,
does the VA have the discretion under its duty to assist to develop the record?
I suppose it does, Your Honor.
Maybe in your substantive appeal, you complained that there hadn't been a further development of the record, or there hadn't been a medical examination that took place.
Yes, Your Honor, and that
so
was.
Am I remembering that correctly?
I don't have a clear recollection, but I'm pretty sure that
okay.
We did. Yes, Your
Honor. All right, and so, are you saying that it was wrong at that point for the VA to say,
no?
You know, we should give Mr. Silva another medical examination to see if we can help develop his claim.
No, Your Honor, we do not take issue with the VA assisting Mr. Silva. And Mr. Silva does appreciate the fact that as a result of that examination, they found that he had a psychiatric disability that was related to his injury to his ankle during active duty. However, that does not mean that he in any way waived or asked the VA to not consider the appeal for service connection for post-traumatic stress disorder. And in fact, during the pendency of that appeal, he submitted additional evidence, including a statement from his treating VA psychiatrist who was treating him for PTSD. Now, one of the anomalies in this process is that I am unable to find any evidence that the VA has ever treated him for either of the two psychiatric conditions that they've service-connected him for. The VA has treated him for post-traumatic stress disorder. And
what relevance is that? I'm trying to figure out how does that fit into how I'm supposed to think about how to resolve this appeal.
Well, the Veterans Court, based upon the submission of the Secretary to them, relied upon their precedential decision in Clemens and said that the PTSD claim and the claim for the mood disorder, which he actually didn't make but was resolved in his favor, were not the same condition, and therefore, or excuse me, were the same condition, and therefore, there was no need to process his appeal, and the VA could unilaterally find that his appeal was a total grant of benefit by the intervening rating decision to grant him service connection, first for an unspecified mood disorder, which they later changed to a bipolar disorder.
So if you disagreed with their finding that the December 2012 rating decision served as a total grant of relief on your 2010 claim, you could have filed a nod there saying this is a misinterpretation of my 2010 claim and how it fits and interrelates with this 2012 rating decision.
We could have, Your Honor. Yeah. There was nothing that prevented us from doing that. And in 2020 hindsight, as the obvious course of this litigation took place, that may have been the better thing to do.
Right. I'm just trying to understand. It feels like what happened in that 2012 rating decision was you got an earlier rating decision from us, but now that one has been mooted out by this new rating decision. Take that one away. Here's your new rating decision. Congratulations. You know, we did find a service-connected psychiatric disorder, and we have now reopened your claim to grant you this amount of service benefits for mood disorder. It's not PTSD, but nevertheless, we also, based on this new medical exam report, have concluded there's still no service-connected PTSD.
Right.
And this is a total grant of relief on the claim.
And
everything got rolled up into that new rating decision, or at least that seems like on its face what it's communicating. And if that is wrong, because in your view, you still had an ongoing separate PTSD claim, then I think the thing to have done in just trying to do an orderly process is to now try to attack that finding in that 2012 rating decision.
Well, that's not illogical or unreasonable. However, Mr. Silva took the position that he had a pending claim for PTSD that had been denied and was properly appealed and was in appeal status.
Excuse me for interrupting.
Yes, that's right.
But both you and the government agree that, number one, certification had not yet taken place.
Correct.
And that the record had not yet gone up.
That it hadn't been transferred to the board. That's correct, Your Honor.
So the regulations, as I understand it, provide that during that period, after an appeal has been filed, but before the record is sent up and certification takes place, new evidence can be considered by the RO. And that's what happened here.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor, and I apologize for not noting it in my brief, but in the course of all of this from 2010 to the present, the Congress amended the statute 38 U.S.C. 7105 in February of 2013 that expressly provided in a new subparagraph E that if either at the time of the original jurisdiction received the substantive appeal, the claimant's representative, if any, submits evidence either to the agency of original jurisdiction or to the board for consideration in connection with the issue or issues with which disagreement was expressed, such evidence shall be subject to initial review by the board.
But we're talking about what the situation was in 2012.
Yes, Your Honor, but we submitted evidence in 2014, and that evidence went directly to the issue of service connection for post-traumatic stress disorder. The question is can the VA undo an ongoing appeal by simply pronouncing that there is a full grant of benefits?
But how did it undo an appeal? It took in the new evidence from the November report. It looked at it. That report is very detailed. It came out with a conclusion. It said no PTSD. And I don't see how anything was undone. That could have been appealed.
Well, That could have been appealed, but he had an appeal in place for the disability that he was being treated for at the VA for post-traumatic stress disorder. He took the position that the fact that they decided he had some other service-connected condition did not and should not have undone his appeal. The real substantive difference here, the harm to Mr. Silva is that the grant of service connection for the mood disorder was an effective date 4 years later. And the effective date, if his appeal is resolved for service connection for PTSD in his favor, goes back 4 years earlier to 2010. So it's unfair in this pro-veteran system for the VA to unilaterally make a determination. The appropriate thing to do under VA regulations...
The rules and the regulations statute seems to contemplate a situation like this where new evidence comes in and the VA, the RO, can act on it.
It does, Your Honor, and that regulation pertains to a supplemental statement of the case in which evidence is received during the course of the appeal, and they make a different decision than the decision on appeal. And they continue the denial, the previous denial, of service connection for PTSD. If they had issued that supplemental statement of the case, then that appeal would have clearly continued and ultimately been certified. And just
let me see if I can understand something.
If I could finish my answer to Judge Shaw, excuse me.
The question
that you asked about the regulation about certification, that is a regulation, and it is an internal processing regulation and not a statutory mandate as 7104 and 7105 are.
But 7104 says that the board is governed by the VA regulations.
No, that they shall make their decisions in accordance with applicable regulations. And I do not believe that the failure to certify is anything other than a processing error in which they didn't get the appeal to the board as they should have many years before. The fact is that this appeal was never transferred to the board for a decision. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What if the December 2012 rating decision, I guess, is it your view that it was somehow illegal of the VA to have issued that rating decision?
No.
Right. And if that rating decision had, in fact, after the medical exam report and issued in November, said, hey, this man, Mr. Silva, deserves PTSD service-connected benefits at 100% rating.
Mm-hmm.
This is a total grant
right of
the relief requested. You'd be fine with that.
Assuming that the effective date was 2010.
Would you agree that that replacement rating decision of the earlier rating decision would have mooted the
his appeal? Absolutely.
The earlier rating decision is basically gone and been replaced by this new rating.
It has resolved his disagreement.
So, yes. I guess the question then is, the VA in its actual December 2012 rating decision did grant some relief, not everything that you wanted, for a psychiatric condition, and then declared this is a total grant of the relief requested. And why doesn't that rating decision likewise serve as a replacement rating decision for the earlier one that you were then attempting to appeal? And so therefore, not only is the underlying rating decision basically been trumped by the new rating decision, likewise, any appeal or attempted appeal from that earlier rating decision has also gone away.
Because Congress's intent is clear in 7105. The appeal is initiated based upon a disagreement with a decision made by the VA. The decision made by the VA was the denial of service connection for PTSD.
Okay, Mr. Crockett, thank you. We'll restore some of your rebuttal time. Let's hear from Mr. Hunter. Is that correct?
That's correct, Chairman. May it please the Court. Despite Mr. Silva's characterizations of the case here, what happened in this case was exemplary. The RO did exactly what it was supposed to do.
Speak up just a tiny bit.
The RO did exactly what it was supposed to do. Mm. Mr. Silva disagreed with the decision issued in January 2011. He filed a substantive appeal in August 2012. And to clarify one of the questions that was asked earlier, in that substantive appeal, he expressly requested that the VA should have obtained a necessary medical opinion as to whether his PTSD related to his service and to re-adjudicate his claim. That is at Appendix 61. I believe Your Honor was asking counsel about that. The RO reviewed the substantive appeal and acted on it in response to a direct request. Obtains an additional opinion, just as requested. And then, upon reviewing the PTSD condition, found some problems, said, well, this stressor for the ankle sprain doesn't appear to meet the criteria. The other stressor for the gas tank incident is post-service, so we can't grant service connection. But what the VA did instead was say, but we can attach a mood disorder. We can find that these symptoms, the symptomatology, does fit under mood disorder. We can grant service connection. We can get you that now. Service connection is a big benefit for a veteran. It allows
Mr.
medical...
Let me ask you one question. This procedure. Why at that point did the RO not issue a supplemental statement of the case?
I don't have a statement of justification from them why they did it. But
do you think as a matter of law under the regulations, at that point they should have issued a supplemental statement of the case?
They certainly had the option to issue a supplemental statement of the case. What I think the RO is doing there is acting in accordance with a number of their attendant duties. One is the duty to assist the claimant, but another, and the whole statutory structure supports this, is not to send granted claims up to the board. When an issue has been resolved at the lowest level possible, the entire statutory and regulatory structure is meant to prevent those claims from moving on. You have to file an NOD if you disagree. You have to further disagree with the statement of the case after it comes out in response to your NOD. The idea being that we don't want to clog the board in an already clogged system with decisions that that claimants don't have an issue with or don't dispute.
After the RO process, the new medical examination and that part of the case, did it notify Mr. Silva about it and any steps that he could take?
I believe the notification comes in the form of the December 2012 decision. If you're asking if there's further documentation, I don't have that.
I'm sorry?
I don't have that in my head. If there is further documentation, I don't have it to put before the court at this time.
I guess the 2012 decision, the December 2012 decision, did notify Mr. Silva that the VA saw this as a total grant of the relief requested and then made it clear that Mr. Silva has his appeal rights preserved for this particular rating decision.
That's right, Your Honor. That's the document we would rely on. If there was an earlier document, I don't know, but we do believe that the decision that was sent to him, which he does not allege any flaw in or that he didn't receive, does say several times, this is a total grant of the issues on appeal for PTSD. It says our examination finds that you did not have PTSD. And then it grants in great detail, here's what we are granting you, here's a 10% grant, here's service connection, and it notified him of his appeal rights. So to the extent a duty was owed, we believe it was filled by that document. So the course of events demonstrates that the RO did exactly what this court has been telling the VA to do for 35 years. Assist the claimant. Read the documents that are being put before you and grant benefits efficiently and early as possible. That's what the RO did. And what they're being told is, well, there's a timing issue, there's a regulatory problem here, but actually nothing in the law prevents the RO from doing this. There's no statute.
Sir, let me ask you, we talked a little bit about, we talked about the possibility of a statement of the case, and that would flow from some of the a supplemental statement of the case. That would flow from some of the VA regulations that were in effect at the time, specifically 38 CFR 19.31A. Okay.
Yes.
Now that we know, a supplemental statement of the case wasn't issued. To what relevance here? What relevance, if any, do you attach to the regulation at 3.156B? Because that says new and material evidence received prior to the expiration of the appeal period. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we have new and material evidence, right?
Yes, sir.
And it's received prior to the expiration of the appeal period, correct?
Yes, sir.
Or prior to the appellate decision, if a timely appeal has been filed. So it's prior to that. And then it goes on. will be considered as having been filed in connection with the claim which was pending at the beginning of the appeal period. And that claim is the claim for PTSD, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So it seems to me that that regulation contemplates, and tell me if you think I'm wrong, that that regulation contemplates the receipt of the kind of evidence that was presented here.
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. 3.15.
So what does that mean? You get what happens when 3.156B goes into effect, as you say is the case here, and the evidence came in, the RO acted on it and came out with a decision. What should happen next?
Well, the effect of that is to reopen the claim, which is what the claim, which is what the decision
they
says.
Said we reopen.
That's right. They said we reopen the claim. 3.156A says that a claimant can reopen with the submission of new and material evidence. 3.156B follows that. That is the definition of a claim, of reopening a claim, is when new and material evidence leads to a re-adjudication. Now, Mr. Silva claims the VA didn't reopen my, we're appealing the denial of reopening. Well, that's not a denial of reopening. That's called reopening. When you look at new evidence and you re-adjudicate
the claim.
He's
saying you reopened it, but not enough for me. Right. Now, he's saying he's thankful for the 10% rating for the mood disorder, but he thinks there should have been more.
Yes, Your Honor. We dispute that in a number of different ways. Had I moved on or trod over your question, I didn't know if I had answered
your
question.
No, in other words, you're saying you think that this case falls, or what happened here, comes under 3.156, correct?
Yes, that's right.
And the result is, if he was dissatisfied with the result, he should have filed an NOD with respect to that.
Yes, sir. Okay. And I can say for sure that it falls under it because at Appendix 63, the decision he was issued makes a shorthand reference to 3.156 by saying, on consideration of new and material evidence as of the examination, there's no way to walk out of that. That is a reference
so
to
So you're
the,
saying it's a 3.156 situation, not a supplemental statement of the case situation.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Is there a point in time where the VARO is without authority to do anything more and it's everything is left up into the board's hands? Where there's a certain juncture where now the VA is shut off from doing anything more and the board has to issue a decision. In other words, when does jurisdiction formally transfer away from the RO and completely into the board?
Yes, Your Honor. Short answer is when the record is certified and transferred to the board. However, there are continuing duties for the RO that continued under the legacy system throughout the appeal process. The duty to assist includes the duty to complete the record and re-adjudicate the claim. But I think once the record has been certified and transferred to the board.
There's nothing in the statute that says that. Is there? Am I right?
That says which part, Your Honor?
That says the jurisdiction transfers to the board once the record has been certified.
No, I don't believe there is anything in the statute.
Is there something in the regulation that says jurisdiction has been transferred to the board once the record has been certified?
I don't know. We may have cited that in our brief, but I don't
think there might be like a dusty old VA general counsel opinion that says that very thing, but I don't know if there's a regulation that says it quite like that.
Right. I don't believe so either. If there were, we probably would have cited it, or Mr. Carpenter would have cited it, I suppose. Okay, so having spent most of my time on the statutory argument, if the court has any other questions on that particular argument. We raised a number of issues in our brief that give this court reasons to dismiss the appeal. The strongest one that we would urge is that the argument simply wasn't presented to the Veterans Court. There is no reference in Mr. Silva's brief to the Veterans Court of 7104, 7105, but these are the statutes he urges compel his victory in the appeal. Well, if his entire argument is based on the statutes, you have to raise them to the court below. The waiver is discretionary for this court, but it should be noted that it just simply wasn't presented. The Veterans Court decision cites 7104 and 7105, but these are for ancillary matters and not at all interpreting the statute. Nevertheless, in Mr. Silva's appeal, he says, well, they must have relied on an erroneous interpretation of these statutes. It must have relied on them, otherwise they would have found for us. That is the hallmark statement of a claim you should have presented.
On that issue, whether there's an erroneous interpretation of the statute, are we really looking at a legal question, or are we looking at an application of facts to the law?
We have a few arguments in the brief, but we do have a lack of jurisdiction argument that there is application of facts to the law at issue here. Mm-hmm. One of the facts being, did the ARA decision resolve the claim in its entirety? Was it a grant of all the issues on appeal? That was something that the RO determined, and since it wasn't appealed, and the board affirmed that, we would argue that that is issues of fact on appeal.
So you agree then that there is a legal issue that's been presented before the court here?
Well, our lack of jurisdiction argument, yes, there is a legal issue. Our lack of jurisdiction argument is phrased in order to limit that there are some issues that we do not believe the court can address.
You're saying there's a legal issue presented to the court, but it's a waived legal issue.
That's correct, Your Honor. I should have phrased it that way. One last statement on the waiver point, and then I'll sit down, is that Mr. Silva's response in his reply cannot be a correct statement of the law on waiver. What he says is that although the issue wasn't ripe because the Veterans Court had not yet relied on these erroneous interpretations, but a careful look at that argument would create an exception, which show that it creates an exception that swallows the rule. It switches the burden. Instead of the litigants' burden to present their arguments to a court, instead what has to happen is that the court has to anticipate the arguments or else they get through the fence. And that's not ever how courts determine waiver. Now, waiver is discretionary, but we would urge that this is not what this court has ever stated about waiver, and Singleton v. Shinseki would tend to bar this kind of argument, which was not presented below. If there's no further questions from the court, I'll
see. Okay, thank you. Mr. Carpenter, we'll give you back four minutes.
Thank you very much, Sean. Quickly on the jurisdictional question, number one, Mr. Silva did present it below. His entire appeal below was on the question of whether or not the board had erred by failing to address the issue. Now, he did not specifically rely upon those statutes because we believe that those statutes were implicit both in the argument and in the requirement of the board to have addressed the issue in the first place. But regardless, this court's jurisdiction is predicated on case determinations. This court's jurisdiction is based upon what the decision was below. And the decision below said that there was no obligation for the board to have addressed the pending appeal. That matter is before this court properly and is within its jurisdiction. Judge Shaw, I believe that 38 CFR 19.31A is mandatory and not permissive. And I also believe, Judge Shin, that there is a general counsel's opinion on the issue, and I will submit it as supplemental authority. I cannot give you the number off the top of my head, as Judge Shaw triggered in my thinking, the regulatory provision.
Are you referring to the GC opinion that Judge Chen referred to? Is it the dusty old opinion?
I'm sorry, I didn't get...
What general counsel opinion are you referring to?
There is a general counsel's opinion that says that... when the VA receives new and material evidence within the appeal time, they are obligated to make a decision, and they specifically reference Section 3.156B as part of the regulatory requirement that requires the issuance of the supplemental statement of the case.
Okay.
And in this case, they made a partially favorable decision, but not a fully favorable decision. The partially favorable was to grant it on the basis of the mood disorder and not on the PTSD.
The VA opinion I was referring to the view of the GC that jurisdiction transfers to the board to decide an appeal once the record has been certified. It has received the certified record.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I misunderstood that.
Okay. That's okay.
But in that regard, that is controlled by the 2013 amendment to 7105 that adds the E1 provision. So it does change that going forward from February of 2013, that when evidence is submitted during the pendency of an appeal under the legacy system, that the board was to consider that in the first instance, unless there was an express waiver by the claimant and a request to have the RO considered in the first instance. And that
wouldn't apply here.
No, that did predate.
That wouldn't be what you just described that took place in 2013 wouldn't apply to this case because this was in December of 2012.
Well, yes and no, Your Honor. What I was referring to that applied to was the April 2014 submission that was made pursuant to 3.156B because this was pending, that submitted the medical opinion from his treating VA doctor about his continuing treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder, and I believe also submitted some Social Security records at that time as well. I may be wrong in that recollection. But clearly, Dr. Goss says...
What statute is this or that went into effect?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What you're saying, there was a change in the law in February 2013?
Yes, it's 38 U.S.C. 7105, the statute that we rely upon in this appeal. And it added subsection E1, and the effective date of that amendment was February of 2013. I see I have very little time left, so I'm not going to go into another subject unless there's any questions from the panel.
No, we thank you, Mr. Carpenter.
And I thank the panel.
We'll take this case under advisement.